Hello all, and welcome to the Europeans Podcast, your weekly look at the weird and wonderful goings-on in this strange continent of ours. I am Dominic Kramer, the Amsterdam half of this podcast, and I'm speaking on Skype to Katie Lee in Paris. What's up, Katie?
Hello. I feel a bit weird because I've just eaten the leftovers of the... I made a massive tartiflette last night, like a good immigrant trying to integrate, and it was basically 50% cheese, and now my pulse is racing. I feel really weird.
Oh, you poor thing. I also I baked cookies yesterday and ate three before I went to bed and then felt really sick for the first few hours, so we both have had bad culinary experiences this week.
Let's make this a nice gentle episode.
Let's. But how's your week been otherwise?
Pretty good. I've been writing about fringe European politics, which is always fun. And the Gilets Jaunes protests are still going on.
Wow.
Which is kind of amazing. But going on much less sort of vigorously than they were. And in the meantime, Macron has been kind of going around the country doing these town hall meetings and talking for hours and hours and hours, which has been interesting.
Has he put his foot in his mouth that many times?
Not too many times. He's been a bit sort of smug and patronizing, but generally, the thing about Macron that's really interesting is that he really knows his stuff. Like, he knows all kinds of weird things about any number of like really niche policies. It's not like people like him anymore, but he's managed to earn back respect. And I think more people are saying, you know what, this guy is a really deeply flawed leader, but at least he's trying and he's really earnest and he really knows the policy of the country. It's an interesting approach and not one that you get from a lot of our leaders these days.
No, that's true.
What's been happening in Amsterdam?
Not much. I've been stuck in rehearsals all week. It's been one of those weeks where I literally haven't seen the outside world, haven't seen any daylight, definitely suffering from vitamin D deficiency. But hey, that's the life for many Europeans, isn't it?
You should get on board what our guest Anya from last week was talking about. She is a big fan of vitamin D supplements for getting some of that sunshine into the blood. Is that science?
Oh, I don't know. Let's not talk about science anymore.
Move on. Tell me who our guest is this week, because I think it's a bit of a special one.
Yeah, this week we've brought out the big guns. My brother, Daniel. Daniel is a journalist at the BBC's political research unit, and he is essentially one of the BBC's in-house parliament nerds, which means his life is rather full of one particular topic in the UK, which is trying to make its way through parliament.
What's that?
Yeah, obviously we're not going to mention what that topic is. The B word. But we decided to give ourselves and Daniel the challenge of talking about parliamentary procedure and, in particular, the rather extraordinary character John Bercow, the Speaker of the House, who's caught the imagination of European newspapers and social media feeds in Europe generally. He was all over my feed shouting, "Order!
Order!"
So we thought it was time to speak to my brother Daniel and find out about what's been going on in Parliament over the last few centuries.
I'm very excited. I heard Daniel on a BBC podcast recently and he sounded exactly like you, except he knew loads of stuff about British politics.
Hey!
No offense. I'm going to be surrounded by Kramers. It's great.
We're going to play tricks on you, Katie. He's going to start asking the questions and I'm going to start answering them and we're going to see if you notice.
Very exciting. But first, have you got anything for everyone's new favourite segment, Commemoration Corner?
Yes. Commemoration Corner heads to Dublin this week, where it has been the centenary of the first Doyle and arguably the centenary of Ireland declaring independence, even if it would take another 30 years for this independence to be recognised internationally. In January 1919, some weeks after a dramatic UK parliamentary election in which Sinn Féin candidates successfully won a majority of the Irish seats in Parliament, those Sinn Féin MPs refused to take their seats in the House of Commons and instead convened their own parliament in Dublin, declaring an independent Ireland. Now, if you want to hear more about Irish history, things that you're perhaps too embarrassed to admit you don't know already, I may be projecting here. Our friends at the Irish Passport make an incredible podcast about Ireland, and I'd highly recommend you tune in.
Yeah.
One of the hosts we had on many months ago talking about horrible plastic Ireland. Ireland, not Ireland.
That's very confusing. An island surrounded by water.
Oh, it's very confusing.
Congratulations, Ireland. Or should I say, co-chorages.
Woohoo.
Bad week.
it's been a very good week for France and Germany, two former wartime enemies, obviously, today very close allies working together in Europe. Some people would say it is the relationship in Europe that matters and drives everyone forward. But for every one of those people, you will find someone else getting really annoyed at that idea and saying, it's not the only relationship that matters. The rest of us are here too. Anyway, it's been a very good week for the relationship known in EU jargon as the Franco-German motor, because Angela Merkel and Emmanuel Macron signed a new treaty that commits them to even closer relations, closer defence ties, all of these initiatives to learn each other's languages. It commits them to the European Union. And this relationship is something that both Macron and Merkel feel really emotional about. They both have a really strong grasp of what that shared history of two world wars has put their countries through. And they really want to make sure that nothing like that ever happens again. But it's definitely fair to say that this idea of the Franco-German relationship getting stronger and maybe more dominant in Europe does unnerve other countries around the continent. And even Donald Tusk came out at the signing ceremony to say, we want a signal from Paris and Berlin that you two aren't just going to go off and do your own thing, that it's really Europe that matters. I don't think that that's what this is about personally, and the treaty itself doesn't include anything particularly crazy. Probably the most controversial thing that's in it is all this defence cooperation, which Merkel said outright is something that she would like to see lead to a European army one day, something that Donald Trump in particular is not a fan of. But there's not really anything radical in it, which is interesting because there was an absolutely huge wave of fake news reports in France in particular, saying stuff like France is going to give part of its territory away to Germany in this treaty and crazy stuff like that. And far-right politicians like Marine Le Pen were really jumping on the bandwagon and saying, yeah, this is a disgraceful erosion of our sovereignty. It isn't. It's actually quite a boring treaty that doesn't contain anything dramatic at all.
It's basically a treaty just saying, we want to be friends and better friends.
Yeah. That's nice. And it was very nice to see them signing it in the beautiful city of Aachen as well, which is a very symbolic choice. It's this really historic city that's a symbol of unification in Europe because it was the seat of Emperor Charlemagne back in the day. And of course, the same city where I saw both Macron and Merkel and met Macron on stage, Dominic, if you cast your mind back to that time that we won that prize last year.
Oh yeah, after you did that little dance break on stage while you were waiting for Macron.
Yeah, and shared that really weird moment with Macron where I was like, only one of us knows that your screaming head is the logo of my podcast. This is weird.
What are the language parts? They've promised to learn each other's language. What, Macron and Merkel?
No, not personally. Like people in France and Germany.
Okay, there are schemes to help them learn each other's languages.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think they want to have, like, at some point, a Franco-German university and that kind of thing. It's nice. That's interesting, actually, because I think probably when Merkel and Macron talk to each other, I reckon they probably do it in English, actually.
Yeah, that would probably make sense. They both speak English pretty well. I like imagining that they've made a Duolingo pact, that they've become friends on Duolingo and have decided to, like, do each other's languages and follow each other to make sure that they reach their daily goals.
And race to see who can get the most points.
Yeah.
Do you know who's got an absolutely massive score on Duolingo?
No, who's got a really high Duolingo score?
The composer of our jingles, Jim Bunn.
Really? In which languages?
Portuguese. He's got a Brazilian girlfriend, so he's been very diligently learning on Duolingo, and now he can say all sorts of useful things.
I've actually discovered a language app that I prefer called Memrise.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's helping my Dutch.
Ah, I'm going to check it out. I'm getting into Spanish this year. That's my New Year's resolution, so.
And AI, obviously.
And AI. I've got quite a large workload. But who's it been a bad week for?
Well, we had various options for bad week this week. It so easily could have been Alex Salmond, the former Scottish First Minister who was charged with sexual assault and attempted rape. But I think we're going to come back to that story in a future episode in more detail because it's still an evolving story. The prize for bad week is handed instead to Cristiano Ronaldo. Yes, I'm going to talk about football, another area which I am totally unqualified to talk about. Fortunately for everyone, football fans and foes alike, I'm not going to attempt to actually talk about the game itself. No, Cristiano Ronaldo had a bad week because he was in court in Spain on charges of tax fraud and ended up settling for 18.8 million euros. I mean, you could argue that maybe it's been a good week because he did manage to avoid any jail time by settling. But it's also been reported that as a result of this fine, he may end up having his Portuguese civil order of merit revoked. There's been some calls for that in his home country of Portugal. He also then went on to post a really awkwardly timed selfie of his happy self on his private jet on the way home, just as news was coming out that the Cardiff City striker Emiliano Sala was missing following a presumed plane crash in the English Channel. So, yeah, really bad week, Cristiano. Bad week.
That's a lot of money. That's almost as rich as we are after all those people subscribe to our Patreon.
Talking of which, thank you, everyone, for supporting us on Patreon. There are a few specific people we'd like to thank, aren't there?
Yes, we want to say a massive thanks to everyone that has signed up, but not least Alexander Dressel, Gail Heppel, Thea Bradbury, Anthony Simon, Adam Cantor, David Lewis, and Alex Climo. Personalised audio messages with our famous jingles are winging their way to you as we speak. To everyone else that started chipping into our little fund, we are massively grateful to you all for helping to keep the show running. And if you would like to join these generous supporters of ours, you can do so now at patreon.com/Europeans Podcast. The link is right there in the show notes.
And apologies that it's all in dollars. American imperialism, am I right?
Word! Back to Cristiano Ronaldo, though. I find him really fascinating. Is there anyone in Europe that has a bigger ego than Ronaldo?
Emmanuel Macron?
Maybe Emmanuel Macron. Or Zlatan, if you want to pick another footballer. But he's just amazing. Like, he opened a museum about himself.
Did he actually?
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Oh, yeah. He's not my favourite person in Europe, but he is definitely an iconic European of our time.
He really is. And we haven't talked about him in way too long, not since the episode about the sculpture of his head at Madeira Airport that went horribly wrong. I'm kind of tempted to repost that this week because it's such a great story.
I think you should, especially after we talked about another controversial statue last week.
It's become a statue podcast.
Or it's become a Cristiano Ronaldo podcast. Cristiano. Shows how much I know about football. So now we are going to speak to one of my actual favourite Europeans, my brother.
Oh.
If you live on the continent of Europe, like I do, you may have had your social media feed full of videos of a rather eccentric Englishman shouting order.
Order!
Because of all this B-word stuff, British Parliament's been getting quite a lot of attention from overseas. And I think Europeans particularly have suddenly realised, oh my God, what happens in the House of Commons? It's such a strange place, which is why we thought it was worth speaking to my brother about what happens in that place.
This is very weird. I've got two Kramers with me.
Hello.
Hello.
Wow, you do sound exactly the same.
Do you know which one was which?
I think so. It's a bit like doing a blind taste test with different samples of like Coke and Pepsi or whatever.
But worse.
Other fizzy drinks are available. Anyway, hi, Daniel Kramer.
Hey, nice to be here.
What's going on?
I am just sitting around waiting to read my newspaper.
Okay, don't make it sound like a chore or anything.
We'll try and get this over and done with as quickly as possible so you can read your newspaper. Sorry for taking up your time, brother.
Daniel, you work in the BBC's political research unit.
I do. So I'm a political researcher in Westminster. So we have an office opposite Parliament. So we've got someone who specialises in the B word, got someone who specialises in like party politics, and I'm meant to know how Parliament works. And I don't think anyone knows. So I've realised that recently, which is quite a confidence booster.
Okay, but also quite alarming for us as a country that no one really knows how our parliament works.
I guess, but it's because we haven't really got a constitution. So like anything that happens, we can just say it's now in the constitution because it's like fluid and responsive. But actually, it just means that no one knows what's going on.
Huh.
So I was talking to Thomas, my husband, about this the other day. He didn't realise that we didn't have a written constitution. And he was like, but how does it work? Who sets the rules then? Who decides what's going to happen?
I think there are lots of different sources of it. There are legal sources, so like historical legal decisions. But then there's, within Parliament, there's this book called Erskine May. But it costs £430 on Amazon.
£430.
Yeah, so this is like the parliamentary Bible, which I think is like the closest we have to a written constitution in terms of like procedure. It's not very accessible if it's cost that much, but they've just decided to put it online. So the next edition is going to be online, and that's them trying to be more transparent. Not that anyone's going to look it up and search. But it's at least a nice gesture.
But actually, people are becoming more interested in the procedure because of all the high drama that's been happening there in the last few months. And there's one guy at the centre who like has quite a lot of power, the Speaker of the House. Could you explain the role of the Speaker of the House a little bit?
Yeah, so the current Speaker of the House is John Bercow. He was elected as a Conservative MP But as soon as you become speaker, you become an independent and you're meant to not hold any partisan views. It's really weird. So they get elected by the MPs, and then when they're elected, they have to be dragged to the chair. I don't really know where this comes from, but like different MPs have to go and like grab you, and you have to seem really reluctant to go to the chair. It's something that I'm just really used to seeing on YouTube, but I've never questioned.
That's very weird. And Burko has become kind of a phenomenon in Europe. People seem to love him. And actually, maybe we can just play a clip of him in action in Parliament so people can get an idea of what he sounds like. I'm going to play you a clip from a compilation of orders announced by John Burko, put together by the German TV show Tagesschau.
Order! I know what I'm doing. Order! Order! There's no good people shouting. There will be an opportunity for other points of order, but the Prime Minister must and will be heard. Order!
It's gone pretty viral. Like, it's not like everyone on the streets of Hamburg is like talking about John Burke or anything, but he has been developing quite a continental fan base. Why do you think that is?
Well, he does have a particular way of talking. So like, he is a small, quintessentially British white man who stands there with this cape hanging off one shoulder and is meant to speak in this weird, archaic way. So like, that in itself makes quite good clickbait, maybe.
Yeah.
But I think like the context of his power at the moment is probably what's got him into the news most. So just as a bit of background, Theresa May's government is currently a minority government in a sort of informal coalition with the Democratic Unionist Party, who are Northern Irish party. So usually the speaker was elected as part of the party who has a majority in the parliament. And the majority in parliament means that there's not much fighting over procedure, over how you're going to timetable parliament, because you don't really have any opposition to it because you can pass anything through. Now that we have a minority government, this person right in the middle who sits between the two sides suddenly has this power. And he's not the kind of person who is backing off from it. He's really embracing it.
But it's kind of amazing that he's getting this power at this moment when he almost was kind of forced out of his role a few months ago. Or maybe he wasn't almost forced out, but there was a big call for him to be forced out because he was somehow criticised for his role in the big Westminster bullying scandal, wasn't he?
Yeah, so it's worth mentioning. So he's been accused by multiple people of either harassment or bullying. Former staff. He denies it all. He was mentioned in a report in response to the sort of Westminster bullying scandal. It kind of called on him to stand down because he was seen as being, if not like guilty and part of it, at least too much associated with that culture. But there's not really a formal way that MPs can get rid of him. And I think he sees himself as being the guardian of the backbenchers. And regardless of what he's accused of, he has like a duty to carry on.
And also he's quite popular still within Parliament because of the way he's using procedure and holding power against the government. So like Labour MPs actually quite like him, don't they?
And the government doesn't like him.
The government really hate him. And it's really fun watching. So Andrea Leadsom is the leader of the House, which basically means she is the government's representative in terms of like how Parliament works. So they have to interact in public quite a lot. And they just have like really underhand digs at each other, which is really fun to watch. So yeah, they hate him. Labour generally are really enjoying him because he's seen as being a champion of anyone who isn't in the executive, any backbench MPs or opposition MPs.
I mean, I'm guessing it's been quite a steep learning curve because, like, without wanting to go into the ins and outs of the B word, the ups and downs of British politics over the last couple of years have meant you've had to get a very deep understanding of, like, the weird quirks of our parliament. Apart from Burko having to get dragged into is it a throne?
Speaker's chair, but let's call it a throne.
This is throne slash chair. Apart from that, what's like the weirdest thing that you've learned about how Parliament works?
I'm trying to look into it at the moment. The fact that we still use Norman French.
What?
In part of our parliamentary language. When a bill passes from the Lords to the Commons or vice versa, there's a representative of one of them who speaks to the other in Norman French.
What?
That's kind of weird, isn't it? It's because that just goes back to remember when we were Norman.
I remember that, yeah.
Right?
I'd almost forgotten.
But that's particularly weird. There was also this moment where the mace became viral as well.
Yes. Well, don't be bashful. I mean, you went viral with a video of this mace incident Can you tell us what happened?
So during all of the parliamentary shenanigans around the B word, there was a Labour MP called Lloyd Russell Moyle, who actually had become really high profile the week before because he was the first person to announce in Parliament that he was HIV positive, which is just a side note. But then sort of made himself famous for a very different reason the week after, when he was really annoyed at a government decision to, in his words, I think, ignore the will of Parliament. He was standing at the back, because when there are no seats, you just have to stand at the back, and just walked up to the middle of Parliament and picked up this huge gold rod. It looks like a crown jewel, and it is there when Parliament is in session. And if it's not there, Parliament can't make any decisions.
Is it magic?
I think it is magic. I have to look into it, but I'm pretty sure.
It's a magic mace.
It's a magic mace, and it has the will of the Queen.
So he was like handling the will of the Queen, effectively.
Yeah, and he basically picked it up and went to walk out with it. But it was really funny because there's a sergeant at arms, which is basically people dressed in tights, who are like meant to guard the place, and they just like went up to him as if they were going to tussle it off him, but he just gave it to them. So he wasn't up for a fight. But actually, interestingly, it does have a history of being used in this way. So John McDonnell, who is now Shadow Chancellor, was kicked out of Parliament for doing it about 10 years ago over sort of airport expansion. So it is used as a form of protest very rarely.
So it's a big deal.
It is a big deal. In terms of like constitutional stuff, because a lot of it is done on precedent, you find MPs referring back to things that happened ages ago. So like Chris Bryant is this Labour MP who's a biographer of Parliament, so knows his stuff. And a few weeks ago, when he was trying to get the Attorney General to publish some B-word papers, his argument was based on an 1850s law case involving Cagliari. Is it called Cagliari?
The what now?
Oh, I don't know.
Capital of Sardinia?
Cagliari, yeah. Si.
Cagliari.
And that was his argument? And that's completely legitimate.
And it worked.
I mean, I don't think it worked because of his argument, but the government was then forced to publish some papers. But I just find it funny that because we're, like, if you compare it to America, where these arguments are based on, here's our constitution, this is what I'm going to refer to. In Britain, because it's all so fluid, you can just pick out something from the 19th century and use it as a legitimate source.
Our country is mad, isn't it?
It is a bit mad. But I kind of like the idea that, like, knowledge is power, that you, if you really know your history, you can play the game better.
Is that good?
No, it's not, is it?
You said he was going to start asking the questions, Dominic.
I mean, that's, is that democratic, Dominic?
No, sorry.
Yeah, Dominic.
It's really bad. I'm really sorry. But I do, there is something strangely appealing about it, don't you think?
I think it's appealing that it's quite fluid and flexible. It means that even though it seems quite archaic and antiquated, it can also become less so.
But isn't there an argument that the whole reason, and I'm really sorry to talk about it very briefly, but the whole reason we're in the B-word mess is because you can kind of do things off the cuff in Britain? So David Cameron was just like, oh, I'm going to have a referendum and it's not really clear if it's going to be binding, but yeah, I mean, it kind of is. Let's just kind of go with the whole thing.
Yeah, kind of. Although, like, the process to getting to the referendum did require, like, proper legislation and parliamentary procedure. It is all a bit messy to get to the referendum, but it also had to go through processes and it wasn't just off the cuff.
So in general, do you enjoy the antiquated quirks of Parliament as a journalist? I imagine you do, or is it more something that you find frustrating?
I do enjoy trying to work it out. I've only been in my post of parliamentary researcher for like 9 months. And when I started, I was a bit terrified by it. And there were all these like parliamentary experts who have been doing it for decades, who I thought I could like call up and pick their brains. And it's really nice that when you pick their brains, they're like, yeah, this is probably the answer, but I don't know because we're in uncharted territory.
Great. I mean, what a great sign of how well things are run in our country. I kind of feel like there should be a uncharted territory drinking game where every time that's mentioned on BBC television, take a shot.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Final question, and actually it's for you, Dominic. What's it like to have a brother that has way more Twitter followers than you do?
Oh, ouch.
Oh, yeah. God. You're just trying to sow division between the two of us. Well, I'm very proud of how many Twitter followers my brother has, thank you. And I think he deserves them much more than you do, Katie.
That was just a really mean way of me asking. Daniel, where can we find you on Twitter?
DCA Kramer.
And where can we find you, Dominic, just to be fair?
I don't even know my Twitter handle. Maybe this is the problem.
For God's sake.
D.A. Kramer. And probably half of my followers are people who think they're following Daniel. My happy ending this week is staying in Britain, where, let's face it, we're in need of some happy endings right now. I'm going to tell you about an extraordinary grandmother who will make you all feel bad about your own life choices.
Okay.
This segment's meant to make you feel happy, isn't it?
I'm waiting.
Well, hopefully it will make you feel happy in terms of inspiration. So Pat Smith, she's amazing. She spent a whole year cleaning beaches voluntarily. She made a New Year's resolution at the start of 2018 to spend each week cleaning a different bay. And she succeeded. She cleaned 52 beaches in 2018 in Devon and Cornwall. She made the resolution after being so upset at the problem of plastic pollution on our beaches and in our seas. And she said to the Times, "These things are used by all of us, and it's shocking to find them polluting our beautiful beaches. I'm driven to try to protect our living planet for my children and grandchildren, and I will continue to do everything in my power to achieve that."
Aww.
And apparently she's decided not to stop with her daily hours of cleaning, despite being occasionally mistaken for someone who is doing mandatory community service.
So, criminal granny.
Yeah. So bravo to you, Pat. If we all spent a few hours on the beach cleaning up plastic, then there wouldn't be such a problem, would there?
Pat Smith, I mean, it's really depressing that you have to go out and do this in the first place, but what an inspiration. We salute you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The Europeans. We'll be back again next Tuesday with more stories from across the continent. If, as ever, you have any ideas or really interesting things happening where you are, please don't hesitate to get in touch. We are easily accessed on Twitter at EuropeansPod. We love getting emails, europeanspodcast@gmail.com. And we're also accessible on Instagram, EuropeansPodcast.
I've got to go now because I'm going around to a friend's house for a very late galette des rois, which is that delicious almondy cake that French people eat in January. And it's got a little bean or a little trinket baked into it. And if you win it, you get to wear a crown all day, which obviously appeals to me because I'm a complete Ronaldo-style egomaniac.
Well, good luck with that, Katie. I had never heard of this, so I think we need you to explain a bit more next week.
I'll post a picture of myself winning the crown, which is obviously going to happen. Have a great week, everyone, and we'll see you next Tuesday. Bye.
Adios.